The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: North Carolina is getting a big revenue surprise, and restaurants and bars can sell cocktails to go after governor issues order. And we'll begin with North Carolina is getting a big revenue surprise. In May, as a pandemic-induced recession loomed, North Carolina budget officials scaled back tax revenue estimates and braced for a shortfall that could be even worse. 7 months later, there is a welcome surprise. State tax revenues have exceeded those grim projections. Revenue in fiscal year 2019 through 20, which ended on June 30, surpassed the forecast by $513 million, 2.2%. In the first 5 months of this fiscal year, general fund revenue is up over the same period in the last fiscal year by $426 million, 4.4%. Sales tax revenue, boosted by a tax on online sales that have soared during the pandemic, is up significantly. Marcia Evans, a spokeswoman for the State Office of State Budget and Management, said the better-than-anticipated revenue collection was due in large part to the initial economic buffer provided by federal fiscal stimulus measures, which bolstered consumer spending, kept some employees on the payroll, and provided relief to those unemployed. While the stimulus funds played a big role and an unexpected second round will be crucial to sustaining North Carolina's recovery, there is another reason for North Carolina's resiliency: its concentration of industries that have prospered despite the pandemic. What's for sure happening is there is a wide dispersion in terms of the economic impact on people and businesses, said Gregory Brown, a professor and executive director of the Kenan Institute of Private Enterprise at the University of North Carolina. Certain industries, the tech industries, parts of healthcare, finance, and real estate, have done extremely well. That pattern is a national one. The Washington Post reported last week that between April and September, 45 of the 50 most valuable publicly traded U.S. companies turned a profit. This hardly means all is well in North Carolina. The unemployment rate has fallen, but is still well above the pre-pandemic rate. Thousands of renters face eviction. Many small businesses are closed or operating at reduced levels. Local governments are struggling with lost revenue. And the worst of the pandemic may yet still be ahead of us in January or February. The pandemic not only exposed the state's economic inequality gap, it widened it. Those working in stable and, in some cases, booming industries have prospered enough to bolster state tax revenues. A strong stock market has magnified their gains, but low-income workers and small business owners who suffer the most from the pandemic will emerge from it with more debt and fewer resources. The challenge for North Carolina state government in the months ahead will be to move from containing the public health crisis to repairing the damage done by its economic toll. The state is well positioned to do that even after the effect of federal stimulus spending wears off. It has $1.1 billion in its rainy day fund. $4 billion in an unreserved balance fund, and a revenue stream that's stronger than expected. When the General Assembly returns in January, the emphasis should be on how to use this good fortune for those less fortunate. That means not only direct payments, but investment in schools, rural health care, vocational training, and infrastructure. Other transformative changes, improbable with the current legislature, would be Medicaid expansion and a higher minimum wage. What shouldn't happen is a retreat in which lawmakers pad the state's reserves and hold back on spending based on a misguided notion that the times call for caution. The state should be pretty generous with the budget. Right now is a terrible time to contract the budget, said Brown of UNC. Budget cuts, with so many in financial jeopardy, he said, would be throwing fuel on a raging dumpster fire. At the end of the pandemic, North Carolina officials said we'll get through this together. Now, with vaccines bringing the pandemic's end into sight, the question is, will North Carolinians recover from this together? State lawmakers will start answering that in January. Restaurants and bars can sell cocktails to go after governor issues order. Governor Roy Cooper announced a new executive order allowing cocktails to go starting at 5 p.m. Monday, December 21st. The measure, Cooper said, offers relief to the ailing restaurant industry without allowing larger gatherings. This order will help people avoid settings that can contribute to increased viral spread while giving restaurants and bars a financial boost that they need right now, said Cooper in a press release. With cases and hospitalizations high around the country, let's all do our part to slow the spread of COVID-19 while supporting local small businesses safely. With the order, North Carolina joins other states, including Virginia, California, and New York, in allowing mixed drinks to be sold as takeout, a measure that the General Assembly failed to include earlier in the year while passing a COVID relief bill. The order allows restaurants, private bars, hotels, and distilleries to package and sell mixed drinks to go. Cocktail orders can include multiple drinks, but only one drink per person. Unless it is extended, the cocktails to go order expires January 31st, 2021. This is just a piece of the puzzle for an industry devastated by the impact of COVID-19, said North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association Executive Director Lynn Mingus. There has been significant loss of revenue for restaurants and hotels. We're just a few days short of Christmas, and this is much needed relief for our industry. Restaurants and bars have struggled mightily since the beginning of the pandemic, as businesses were shut down to help slow the spread of coronavirus. As North Carolina started to reopen in May, restaurants could open their dining rooms at half capacity, but bars remain closed until October. Despite pivots, retail sales, takeout service, and government relief, dozens of Triangle restaurants have already closed for good. Mingus said allowing cocktail sales to go helps balance the impact of capacity restrictions and alcohol curfews. Reduced capacity and curfews are trying to keep people out of crowded bars and restaurants and still serve customers, Mingus said. This cocktails to go is related to that. State Senator Jay Chonhury, a Democrat from Raleigh, led a proposal at the legislature in May to approve delivery cocktails, but the measure was left out of a state COVID relief bill after failing to collect enough Republican support. Chan Hori said the executive order moves North Carolina into the majority of states allowing this kind of COVID relief to bars and restaurants. I think an executive order of this kind hopefully will provide a big boost for restaurants and bars as we're in the holiday season, Chaudhuri said. I think a clear majority of states have carried out similar legislative or policy proposals, so I'm delighted to see Governor Cooper do the same. It's something that can clearly serve as a lifeline. At Durham cocktail bar Kingfisher, co-owner Sean Umstead bought thousands of small bottles months ago, anticipating a cocktails to go order that never came. As soon as the order went out Monday, Umstead got to work pre-mixing cocktails. He said he doesn't know if it will save all bars, but that it does help. Every bar is different. There's not a savior for every style of bar that exists, Umstead said. Even if it's a life vest for some, it's still worth doing. Cooper's order had the support of North Carolina's Council of State, according to the governor's press release. Since the start of the pandemic and Cooper's executive orders associated with it, there has been disagreement over whether he needs to get a majority of the Council of State to concur with his orders. The Council of State is made up of the 10 elected officials who lead different parts of the state's executive branch, from the governor to the labor commissioner, treasurer, and attorney general. And while Cooper is a Democrat, the council itself has a 6-4 Republican majority. So on some of the more politically controversial orders Cooper has issued, the Republican members have said they wanted more of a say in what was ultimately decided. Republican Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who ran unsuccessfully against Cooper for governor in November, sued Cooper earlier this year, saying he shouldn't be able to issue any coronavirus executive orders without concurrence from the rest of the Council of State. Next, big-time college sports face a reckoning. The U.S. Supreme Court's December 16th decision to hear on appeal a landmark antitrust suit on paying college players will deliver a second jolt in less than a year to big-time college athletes. The court's action follows a first jolt delivered by COVID-19, which is having the effect of electroconvulsive shock therapy on the system that governs collegiate sports. In this case, the patient strapped to the gurney is a deformity that has been chasing foolish goals, misallocating resources, and ditching academic priorities for nearly a century. To illustrate, over the past decade, big-time sports revenue skyrocketed by 50%, while deficit spending soared to unheard-of levels. Despite the $1.5 billion windfall in annual revenues from March Madness and the college football playoff, only a handful of big-time athletic programs operate in the black. The Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics estimates debt at the biggest schools at $9.2 billion, with almost non-existent reserves. In the face of drastic cuts in television revenues and gate receipts, sport after sport is being cut in the so-called non-revenue category. Irresponsible spending is clearly at the heart of the crisis. For years, big-time schools have been wasting millions on jock-only facilities that offer bowling, laser tag, slumber rooms, miniature golf courses, and other amusement park excesses to recruit and keep 4- and 5-star athletes. Between 2009 and 2018, coaching salaries increased by 99% and now stand at $500 million annually. Stadium upgrades include a $15 million 5-story instant replay screen at Auburn University. Schools getting the postseason money spent it in any way they choose, and far of too little of it goes to athletes or other students. Adding now to this unsustainable jumble is the loud clamor to pay college athletes. The issue is getting more and more attention from college, where legislation to create a presidential commission on reform of college athletics has just been introduced. Most likely, pay for play would be its first priority. Paying the players is a good idea, but what form should their compensation take? Outraged critics cite the unjustifiable spectacle of rich coaches patrolling the sidelines while their players, many of whom come from disadvantaged backgrounds, get scholarships but don't get paid. The remedy demanded is called NIL, to let players license their name, image, and likeness to businesses and other interested parties for endorsements and social media posts. Several states have passed NIL legislation that has that becomes effective next year, with what appears to be intractable details yet to be ironed out. It's likely that a few stars will earn handsome rewards while others don't get much. Academics, including graduation rates, could suffer even more as players seek to boost earnings by an endless search for more social media followers. The most valuable compensation for players would be is to insist that our college and universities fulfill their basic mission by giving them an education they need and deserve. The starting point should be to dedicate a significant revenue stream from March Madness and the college football playoff to further the education of college athletes, especially those from disadvantaged backgrounds. A few of the steps to accomplish that aim are: cut out voluntary practice time and strictly observe the NCAA's stated but unenforced limit of 20 hours per week. Teach freshmen literacy command, how to use a library, and other basic skills. Offer athletes more flexibility in meeting graduation requirements. The return on such an investment would be enormous. Almost invariably, well-educated athletes lead high-impact lives. They build roads, bridges, and schools, find cures for dreaded diseases, and inspire the rest of us to excel. It would be a terrible mistake to keep wasting human potential, especially the talents of young minorities who believe sports are their only pathway to success. Achieving the full promise of America is the compensation our young athletes need and deserve. The win-at-all-costs credo in college athletic has done great damage, mainly by undercutting the basic principle of academics first. Yes, we do need to pay the players, to pay them with an education that will guide them through a fulfilling life. And this is an editorial by John LeBar and Alan Paul. They are co-anchors of Marching Toward Madness, How to Save the Games You've Always Loved. LeBar coached tennis at Duke and served as director of undergraduate studies. Next, DMV will begin replacing old license plates in January. If your North Carolina license plate is at least 6 years old, the Division of Motor Vehicles is going to give you a new one when your registration comes up for renewal starting January 1st. It will be the first time that North Carolina has set a time limit for replacing a license plate. Up till now, you could keep the one you were given as long as it held up. Some on the road are decades old. But the General Assembly ordered DMV to begin replacing plates starting July 1, 2020. The date was pushed back 6 months after the DMV said it wasn't ready because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Vehicle owners will be notified if their plate is ready to be replaced when they get their registration renewal notice. They'll be given the option of renewing in person at a license plate agency, where they will be handed the new plate or by mail, in which case the replacement will arrive with the new registration card. There will be no additional charge for the new plate beyond the standard registration renewal fee and vehicle property tax payment. But replacing the plates will cost money. The DMV estimates the state will spend $16 million on the effort in the first year, including one-time IT and other costs, said spokesman Steve Abbott. After that, replacing existing plates will cost about $2 million a year. The DMV expects to replace 2.4 million plates the first year, Abbott said, and about 500,000 in the second year. On January 1, 2022, the state will begin to replace specialty license plates, including commercial, farm, taxi, and personalized plates. The specialty plates will be made with a new digital process. They'll still be aluminum and look just like other plates, but the letters and numbers will be flat rather than raised as they are now. Eventually, all North Carolina license plates will be made this way. Vehicle owners will have the option of keeping their existing plate number or getting a new one. If they opt to keep the existing number, the replacement will be a flat plate as well. Owners will also be able to choose between the three standard backgrounds: First in Flight, First in Freedom, and In God We Trust. Once replaced, the old plates will no longer be valid, and DMV would like people to return them to their local license plate agency office so they won't be used for nefarious purposes. But there is no penalty for not returning one. The replacement plates use the latest in reflective technology to make them easier to see and read at night. They're also designed to be more legible by machines that read plates to assess tolls or allow vehicles to enter or exit parking areas. The idea originated in the General Assembly, which included the replacement requirement in a bill approved last year, making other changes to motor vehicle laws. The DMV and the Department of Transportation say they didn't ask for it. Same for the State Highway Patrol and the NC Sheriff's Association, whose members will benefit from more legible plates. The first version of the bill mandating the replacement was introduced in the House and included a provision with detailed specifications for making the new plates more reflective. WRAL-TV reported that those specifications belonged to a particular product made by 3M. The Senate Transportation Committee later stripped out the detailed specs for making the plates reflective, restoring language that simply said the plates should be treated with reflectorized materials to make them easier to see at night. 3M was one of two companies that bid on the contract to provide the reflective coating on the plates 2 years ago, according to Abbott. The other was J.R. Wald, which already had the license tag contract with the state. Correction Enterprises, a program within the State Department of Public Safety, chose to continue with J.R. Wald, which uses reflective material from Avery Dennison Corporation. The law requires the plates to be replaced every 7 years. If yours will turn seven in the coming year, DMV will replace it. The new plates will be made by inmates at the NC Correctional Institute for Women in Raleigh. About 60 inmates work about 35 hours a week in the prison's license tag plant, where in addition to work experience, they receive between 20 and 28 cents an hour based on seniority, said Jerry Higgins, spokesman for the state correction system. The women inmates already churn out between 2.5 million and 3 million plates a year for vehicles being registered in the state for the first time. With the replacement plates this coming year, they'll make nearly double that many. Next, two North Carolina cities are ranked among the top in the country for women entrepreneurs. Raleigh and Charlotte ranked best for women entrepreneurs. The two most populous metropolitan areas in North Carolina are ranked among the best places for women to work and succeed. A new study by financial advising data website Smart Asset ranked the Raleigh-Charlotte metro areas in the top half of their study, looking at favorable environments for women-owned businesses based on Census Bureau and Bureau of Labor Statistics data. The Cary Raleigh Metro was ranked number 12 out of 25 areas studied by Smart Asset for the second year in a row, according to the Census Bureau data. The area was listed as having women owning 20.4% of all businesses and 2.4% of businesses with over 500 employees. Its other metrics include Raleigh's women-to-men pay ratio being 76% and its rate of startups operating after a year in the area, which is 80%. The Charlotte-Concord-Gastonia Metro was ranked 8th, a major bump from being in 22nd place in 2019 study. The area was listed as having women owning 19% of all businesses and 3.3% of businesses with over 500 employees. The women-to-pay ratio is slightly lower than Raleigh's at 75%, and its startup survival rate is 80%. Additionally, the September 2020 unemployment rate was 6% and 7% for Raleigh and Charlotte, respectively. The Minneapolis, Minnesota metro area was ranked as number 1 in the list. The Smart Asset study also based their rankings on the unemployment rate for women. New business applications in 2020 relative to the average in 2015 through 2019, and the rate of businesses that had profits or broke even. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.